The Tour Divide in 2015, I have zero photos from, and I actually raced it twice that year. I raced it and I went back and rode a time trial and beat my own time by a day and a half. But there's zero documentation from that. I had nothing. I had a flip phone and I had my bike, and that's it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast, your meeting place for all things bikes, adventures, and the stories that follow. I'm your host, Charles Detmer. Hello, fellow gravel junkies, and welcome back to the Gravel Junction podcast. It's wonderful to have you. I'm particularly excited about today's show, and I'm trying my best in this intro to remain calm, level, and well-paced, which is proving a challenge. Our guest today is someone that I've had on my list of people to talk to from before there even was a list. If you follow the sport, if you have been following the sport for even a few minutes, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. I'm referring, obviously, to the wonderful Lael Wilcox, the ultra endurance powerhouse, who has been at the pointy end of some of the world's most arduous races and events. We're talking Tour Divide, Badlands, Silk Road, about to do the Rhino Run, the Trans Am. You know, we're talking thousands of kilometers, and doing all of this with an incredible smile on her face on very little sleep. I think Lael is a role model to many, and myself included. So to be able to sit down and hear a bit of her origin story and how she got to be the athlete that she is today, it was a privilege. And it's not just what Lael is able to achieve or has achieved on the bike, it's also the message she is pushing, the message of equality in the sport of cycling, both in competitive and non-competitive spheres. So to be able to hear a bit more about what that means to her and that ambassadorial role that I referred to in the show, one that she has inherited rather organically, but one that she now takes on and moves forward with a real purpose. It was great to talk about that. So as you can hear, I'm a fan, and these are the reasons I do the show, because I get to talk to amazing people like Lael. And I hope you enjoy the show as much as I enjoyed recording it. So here we go. My conversation with Lael Wilcox. Enjoy. Well, Lael, thank you for taking the time and welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Awesome. Where in the world are you? You've been running around a bit.
Yeah, I'm in Switzerland. I've been here for a couple of days just visiting friends, and it's just pouring rain, but it's a good time to catch up with friends and do some computer work. And then I actually fly home to Tucson, Arizona tomorrow. So I've been in Europe for almost the entire summer, so it'll be good to be home.
Yeah, because that was actually something I had on my list there, because, you know, you follow on social media, you've been bouncing around, had a bit of a European summer holiday, so to speak, but on the bike, like going to many places. Mm-hmm. Like, where did you, you were in Lithuania? Was it Lithuania?
Yeah, most recently in Lithuania. My wife was born there and lived there till she was four, but her grandparents on both sides still live there, and her father still lives there. So we flew in and actually biked to go visit all of them. They live in different areas of the country. So we got to see a lot of the country by bike, and it was really wonderful. Great way to visit, a good balance of family time and bike time. So that was super fun.
I'm sure you've got quite good now at traveling with your bike. Like, there's a lot of airplanes within Europe, I'm sure, with your bike. So you've got that down pat now.
Oh, it's such a pain every time. And then you get to the other side, and I have this wonderful, you know, rolling bike case. But then you get there and you're like, oh man, now we have to get like a taxi that can fit two bikes. And it's always kind of like a hassle. But then, you know, in the end, I'm just so happy to have my bike that it's worth it. But yeah, it's always a pain.
Yeah. I mean, I do the same. I travel a lot with my bike. I have a hard case, and it's the admin between, and it's always worth it. And then that, like when you crack open the bag to make sure everything's still in one piece as well.
Yeah.
Is that stress?
Yeah. Yeah. I've never had it break. So, you know, that's fortunate.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. Touching wood. We were talking about there just before hitting record, that you were at Badlands. Mm-hmm. How was that as far as, because that's sort of a shorter, in inverted commas, for you sort of event? Was it quite a different style of riding?
Yeah, it is. It was 750K. Rue and I got to tour half of it before the race. So that was awesome because both we got to see it. And then I also saw, you know, kind of what I was getting myself into. And it's a really lovely route. Super diverse, not very technical, definitely gravel friendly, lots of climbing, which I love. But really, you know, most of the races I do are over 1,000K. Sometimes like the longest has been 7,000K, the Trans Am. So this was a bit of a sprint. And with that in mind, nobody's sleeping, you know, and the race took me over 2 days and it's like two nights where I don't think anybody in the top 20 really slept. I took a few cat naps, but that's a long time to stay awake and ride. Fortunately, it was hot in the day, but really warm at night. So that makes it easier for me to get through the dark hours when I don't feel cold. I feel less like in danger for whatever reason. I feel like comfortable being out there, and it was quiet. It was really peaceful and lovely. Even with 300 riders, I rode alone the entire way, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, which is, because when you were saying that before, 300 riders, I mean, last year, I spoke to a number of people who rode last year, and it seemed to have left mental scars, last year's edition of the race. So I guess it was the heat.
I heard it was like super hot. Yeah.
Yeah. But this year seemed a lot more mild, which is good. Good for the race, getting more competitors out there. So that's cool that you got to do mm-hmm. that. It is one on the list one day to tackle that. So, you know, when I was sitting to think about, you know, what we were going to chat about today, I was sitting here going, you know, I'm sure you've done so many conversations and interviews, etc. And there's so many things that smarter people than I have covered well with you. And I was kind of like, okay, so what's an angle from my side that I haven't really, information would be cool for the listeners and myself to know, you know? So I thought of what kind of dawned on me was to look at it from, like there's this part, the ultra endurance racer, Lael Wilcox, right? You know, that, you know, everybody knows that you've seen a lot of films, but the two parts before and after, if you want to call it that, which is sort of your origin story up until, I guess, a definitive point for me as an onlooker would be the 2015 Tour Divide. That was a point where, you know, really came onto people's radar. And I'd love to try and hear, what was the story leading up to you getting to that start line, you know, coming from Anchorage, Alaska, to then how you end up at a start line at a race like that all those years later?
Yeah, I mean, so I really got into riding just to commute to work. I've never owned a car, don't know how to drive. I used to walk and run everywhere. And then I started borrowing a bike just to get to work at a brewery, and it was 6K and it was horrible. It's like, why would anybody ride a bike? This is terrible. But I mean, I pretty quickly realized like this is an amazing vehicle to get around. It's so much faster than walking. It can take me so much farther than running. I can carry things on the bike. So within like, you know, a couple months of commuting, I was riding all over the town. And then I got this idea I'd want to ride across the country, across the US. And I never heard of anybody doing that. But I just thought, this is the way I could like see the country. I could imagine like riding every day and then camping somewhere new every night and piece like day to day of covering a long distance. And that was like immediately the most important thing to me was to just do that. But I didn't see the bike as a sport. It was just the vehicle for me, like propelling myself on a trip.
And were you quite young at this point? Like
when
you
I was 20.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I was 20. So I was just finishing maybe 21 or 20 to 21. And I was just finishing university. And I didn't have any money. But I was like, you don't really need money. If you have a tent, you have sleeping equipment, you just need, and you can camp for free. You just need money to buy food. So that was the start of it really. And then I, did that first trip. I thought it would be like one trip and then I would go back to school. I wanted to go to medical school to be a doctor. But I finished that first trip. I went down the east of the U.S. and finished in Key West, Florida, the end of the road, and then out of money, got a job, saved money for a couple months, and then continued. And then it became like this kind of obsession where it was like bike, do a trip, stop, save money working at a restaurant, and then do another trip. And I did that for 7 years. And it started on road and then became more like dirt roads and then in more in different places. So Europe and South Africa, the Middle East. And then the way at that time I was traveling with my boyfriend, we would find different bike routes because there weren't like navigation apps like Komoot. There were like really old school GPS. We didn't have smartphones. So we would find out about like nice places to ride from race routes because people were starting to host bike packing races like the Tour Divide, which is based on the Great Divide mountain bike route that Adventure Cycling put together. And then I rode like a piece of that and then thought this is really cool to ride on like dirt roads and trails. It's a lot more interesting than just riding paved roads. So it's finding these different routes around the world from race routes, like a bike odyssey in Greece. And then I ended up on this Holy Land Challenge in Israel just to tour and then realized that I would still be in the country when the race happened. And this was spring 2015. And I thought, okay, well, I'm still going to be here. Why don't I just try the race just to see how it goes? And I didn't really think about like competition. I'd done one other bike race before that. And I was like, well, this is different because it's self-supported. It's a long distance. I've already been riding this route. The route's fantastic. What would it be like to ride longer days and to push my limits? I had to learn how to use a GPS because I'd never done that before. So I did practice. And that was probably my biggest hurdle because I was like, oh man, I'm really bad with technology. But I learned how to like read a GPS, follow the track. Because that's essential to these routes. They're never marked. So you always have to follow like a line on your GPS. And then I show up for the race, like just with my touring setup, which is like a used steel bicycle with a dead fork. I had running shoes and just, you know, my kind of beat up equipment. And I was the only woman. It was all these guys. And I had thought going to this race, like if this goes well, I'm going to go home to Alaska. And then in a week, I'm going to leave Alaska, ride to Banff, Canada by myself, take a week off, and then race the Tour Divide. So I already had this idea, like, if I like racing, if this goes well, then that's the next step. So that's exactly what I did.
So you knew the Tour Divide, you knew about that. It was something you'd heard of. And so then after...
I toured part of the route because it's actually a touring route.
Right.
Originally Great Divide route. So I knew part of the route. I'd ridden it. It's just dirt roads.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Wow. So is it safe to say then, because from a physical point of view, all those years of riding, you just built up this base fitness that you were able to do those long distances? I mean, when you were just riding from place to place, were you doing big, long days just by virtue of what you were doing, or would you break it down to smaller chunks? Like, where did that endurance come from?
I mean, I think I was used to living on the bike. Yeah, you know, I knew what I needed to like get through, but I didn't really think about like wanting to push, like going hard or far.
Find your limits, so to speak.
Yeah, I wasn't, yeah. Especially like at that time touring with my boyfriend, I just wasn't like motivated for that. Sometimes you end up doing long days just because you need to get to services. So it's like, hey, you build like a kind of resilience where you're like, okay, because like bike touring is always some kind of deprivation because you can't carry everything. You don't have enough food or water. You're exposed to the weather. So you kind of build like a toughness through that. But I didn't realize like I would get so excited about the ultra version of it, because it felt like for so long, it felt to me so mundane. And actually I was like, I have a background as a runner. So I'm riding my bike and I'm always wishing, I wish I was running instead. Because I was just like, I don't need this bike. Sometimes I would just like dream of like throwing it off a cliff. I was like, I don't even want this
yeah,
bike.
It's that whole running, right? It's like just pop your shoes on and off you go. There's that freedom to it.
Yeah, you can go out the door. It's like freedom. But then I think because I did it for so long that it just kind of transformed into that same headspace where now it's like when I'm on my bike, that's where I feel like the most natural version of myself now because I've spent so much time doing it.
Okay. Well, I mean, okay. So that, I mean, that gives me a much better idea of then how you kind of got to that point. Because as I say, that period from 2015 and then a few years after that is so well documented. I mean, winning the, it was the Tour Divide, right? 2015, becoming the first woman and first American. Is that correct?
I won the Trans Am.
The Trans Am.
But
yeah.
None of that is documented at all. No one was taking photos. No one was making videos. Like zero of that. There was the race organizer for the Trans Am that was driving his car along the route and took, like, his friend took like five photos maybe. The Tour Divide in 2015, I have zero photos from, and I actually raced it twice that year. I raced it and I went back and rode a time trial and beat my own time by a day and a half. But there's zero documentation from that. I had nothing. I had a flip phone and I had my bike, and that's it.
Crazy. So now it's the urban myth that just grows from iteration
to iteration. You know, it's like we shared like that story and the video we made in 2019, but that was 4 years later.
That's so interesting to hear that, because as I say, you know, I consume as much cycling documentaries and all that sort of, I love that sort of side of things. And I'd kind of put the picture together quite differently, because you hear so much about that 2015, 2016, maybe you almost create an image in your head, but now hearing you say that there isn't actually documentary photographs or films, is that because the race wasn't as well known or just wasn't a thing?
Well, it's a lot of work to document this stuff. You know, to have somebody out there that actually has the skills to take photos, that has the plan, that has the budget, any of this stuff. So, you know, at the time, all I was thinking was like, I want to ride this stuff. I'd never take photos. I mean, I didn't even have like any capacity to do that. I didn't even have that thought. But then it was actually the end of 2015. I did my first video project was about an attempt to ride the Arizona Trail. So that's the first time I made a video, and that was 2015. And then that changed my concept for the whole thing. It was definitely kind of jarring. You know, it's like I'm so used to being alone for months at a time. And then all of a sudden I have like three cameras on me while I'm trying to like buy chips at the grocery store. And I kind of had this moment, like this really weird, like it kind of makes you paranoid. You know, you're like, wow. And then trying to focus in my sleep deprived state of like what I need to do to kind of successfully do my ride. But I think, you know, having that experience, like I realized how to like deal with that. And that ride was a total failure. Like I had to quit after 2 days. I had breathing problems. And then I was so worried. I was like, I had these great successes on the Tour Divide. And then, you know, now I have like the time that I fail is when it's documented and made into a video. So I was like worried about that. I was like, how is this going to like turn out? But they're like, the guys who were making it are like, we can still share like a really inspiring story from this. And they did. They did a really good job. And that kind of taught me that, you know, even when things don't go right, the story's still good. And it was an ad for REI, the distributor. And then I realized, oh, this was like a new concept for me. I was like, oh, companies could pay for stories that are technically ads for them because their logo's on it, but it tells a real story. And that stuck with me. And that's kind of what drove me to that direction. But a few years later, when I met Rue, my wife, and she could actually do those things.
Yeah. And that's like definitely one of the things I wanted to kind of unpack, because I mean, there were a few things you touched on there. One of them being, I was going to bring it up later, we might as well talk about it now, not to get into the political side of things, but there have been incidents, haven't there, in the not so distant past, where on these so-called unsupported races, where a media crew has seen has been frowned upon, shall we say, to say that it could add added benefit, etc. And do you find now it's a bit of it's choosing between, okay, there's the unsupported race version of it, fine, that's the rules and regulations, but at the same time, documenting the race can be equally as important, because right, the message that can come with that, and I want to kind of go on to that, because I feel like there's a sort of ambassadorial role that you have organically found yourself, and being able to document what you do is important, correct, to what you're trying to say.
It has been. So I've run into this issue in some races where people find that, you know, having my wife Rue there shooting gives me an emotional boost. So then, I mean, the leap is pretty extreme, where it's like because she's there with the camera, even though we're not talking, because I see her with the camera, all of a sudden, you know, I win the race, which is, I mean, like, we're not even interacting. It's like she's taking a photo of me. That seems like a pretty big jump, but this is basically the discussion. But then the part of the problem is that this idea is not consistent for everyone. It's been mostly directed towards me. So many men have made videos about their accomplishments in these same races and nobody cares. They're never criticized for this. And then it's like, well, what's the difference between them and me? If their brother's shooting them or their dad's there or their wife's there, if for whatever reason, for them, it's fine. And for me, it's not. So that's part of it, is that it's, you know, very sexist, which I've come to find out from like looking at this for years. And then the second part now is like, I was so motivated to share these stories because I want to encourage people to ride, to go to these beautiful places and see it for themselves. And now I've put in all that work that I'm less concerned about it because I've made so many videos. I've showed the Tour Divide twice, the Arizona Trail. And now, so next year I'm going to race, the Triple Crown, the three biggest races in the US, but without any media, because I feel like I've done it and now I don't have to. And now I can just race and try to do my best and just be focused on the race, which is actually a lot less pressure for me. I don't have to coordinate a video project. You know, it's like all I have to do is show up and race. So it'll be refreshing.
Yeah, because I can imagine that's a lot of extra pressure there. And I must imagine, you know, it's a good position to be in where now you've, as you say, you've put in that work over the years that you can go and do that race. But even just by completing those events that you're planning, for example, even if there's not a media team behind you, it will still get coverage and it will still spread the message, which is, it's a wonderful place to be because you can still do it on your terms.
Yeah. And I really want to encourage more women to show up to the starts because, you know, this was like a huge goal for me in all of these projects, was like, I want more women to feel like they're welcome. And it hasn't worked. This past year, the Tour Divide, I think there were 180 starters, 12 women. You know, in some of these Atlas Mountain race, there are almost 200 starters, 4 women. These statistics are terrible. I mean, that's actually really bad. So it's like, but maybe it's just vocally asking women, hey, please show up for the start to show that, you know, we should be there. It, you know, I mean, the best way I found is inviting specific friends. Like I did a race in Catalonia this spring, which was really cool. The organizers are very motivated to get more women there. It was Cromvioi. Basically, Crovioge. So it's like 1400K in Catalonia on road. And they were like, we want more women to be there. And so we had, you know, the race was not that big this year, but we had 5 women start out of something like 40 maybe. But then 3 finished in the top 8. That's a great statistic. Like that has never happened in a bikepacking race before. So then that kind of stuff is super encouraging to me, but you have to get more women to the start to get those results. So I think, you know, it's like, I felt like media was a great tool, but I think personal invitation, I'm also organizing women's bikepacking rallies, like these like opportunities for women to actually show up actually make a bigger difference than any of the rest of it.
I was thinking about that exact point going, you know, there's almost like a bit of a sweet irony in that by you doing this competitive ultra racing in a so-called man's world, shall we call it that, you're actually also lowering the barrier to for women and girls just to get on their bikes, competitive or not, which I think there's right, two parts, yeah, isn't it? There's, you could argue that by getting more women and girls on bikes in a non-competitive way and making them feel more comfortable, that could be the sort of the gateway into more women racing potentially.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's like, I don't actually care if they race, but I feel like they should if they want to. And they should feel capable of that because they are, I think, you know, when we look at ultra endurance racing, it's like men don't have like traits that make them stronger at it than women in the end. And the only way to do this is to prove it with results, but it's super hard to do if there are no women showing up to the start. Because I have won, like I won the Trans Am, but I don't think I'm the only woman capable of this. But we have to get more women there to like show that this is possible. So you know, the sport, sometimes I think about it, I'm like, this sport's pretty disgusting. It's like sleep deprivation. You're eating like junk food and, you know, you look like a crazy animal. But
why are we doing this?
It's like, it's not romantic. But then you look at like the beauty of the places and you think about like the human capacity and like all of that stuff is fascinating. And like, it's also, it could, it helps people build confidence too, that they can take on these challenges. So I think it's cool, but then I know the inside of it. And I'm like, oh God, I would never recommend that for anyone to do, because it's...
I think that's like most things, isn't it? The brochure is always really shiny.
Yeah.
And then when you kind of read deeper into the fine print, like anything in life, there is that sort of gruntier side to it where you just got to kind of get through the slog. But then it's choosing, you know... Well, the saying, someone said to me, you got to choose what flavor shit sandwich you want to eat at some stage. It's got to be something to it.
Yeah. And then I'm like, well, what would I rather be doing? Like sitting at home watching TV? You know, I mean, like the hardship is part of it, but then it always gets better and there's always something like valuable out there. So it keeps bringing me back.
In your recent TED talk that you did, which I really enjoyed, there was a line where you said in there about, you know, I never saw cycling as a sport, as you said earlier. It was a means of transportation, inexpensive travel and adventure. Would you say like your point of view or how you look at the bicycle has kind of changed over the years by virtue of what you've done? Or is it kind of it's a combination of both now, you know, taking into account the competitive side and this, I guess, or ambassadorial role that you kind of find yourself in now?
Yeah.
You know, what is the bicycle to you? Has it changed over those years?
It has totally changed for me. I mean, you know, I kind of looked at this as like this functional machine, which it still is, but I'm like, there's so much more excitement involved. I like ride these bikes and I feel joy, you know, like just that. And I feel like everybody can connect to that. This first step on the pedals where you feel the air rushing back and you're like excited to be moving. Then I also think about like where it's taken me around the world, because now this is my job. I can't believe I get to ride my bike as work. And then like how many people I've met, how many wonderful people I've met because of the bike, because, you know, a race organizer asked me to come to their place to ride their route. And then I'm like, that's changed the direction of everything I do. And then thinking about how small that world is, because in the end, like in bikepacking, everybody ends up knowing everybody, or at least is connected some way. And it forms like this really, for the most part, really encouraging community. And that's like, I think, especially with all the hard things we have to face all the time, it's nice to have that to come back to. It's like the simple bike ride with friends or going somewhere or seeing a new route, like can kind of keep you motivated for everything else you have to face.
Yeah. And it seems like that's something that you kind of make, whether it's conscious or not, a priority, that enjoyment side. Yes, you have the competition, but stripping it down to that basic enjoyment of what you get when you ride a bike, you know, like for me, with starting the show, it was like, I want people to get on bikes. I want them to feel like I do when I ride a bike, you know, that silly smile, that grin, because it's just that freedom. It's such a good feeling. And wanting to kind of spread that. And in your case, you know, spreading the message to make sure there's more equality in the sport, because there's such a long way to go. But, you know, people like yourselves getting involved in that, it's so important. And doing things, like you say, riding with friends and loved ones, which kind of brings me on to my next point. As much as we see you often on a bike by yourself, riding crazy long distances, there's more to it, isn't there, in that there's a dynamic duo. And I refer, of course, to your wife, Rue, who, especially in the last few years, is along with you on a lot of these, behind the lens, you know, very talented filmmaker, photographer. How has that changed your experience of what you're doing, having, you know, your wife with you creating these things? It must be a good experience.
Yeah. I mean, to have Rue there, and when we get to travel together, it's my favorite thing in the world, because then she actually gets to see it too. And we get to ride together and experience this thing. And then she captures photos. And then, I mean, when I'm away from that trip, it's like, I look back at these and I'm like, I can't believe we were actually there, because you can't like hold the beauty of a place in your mind like a photo can, you know, or a video, or to have that, you know, and to look back at things we were doing 2 years ago. It's amazing, you know, and she's super talented at this. So I can't believe that she has this ability, and that she also has always wanted to spend time on the bike. And so effortlessly kind of got into this sport. We met in 2017, and that was the first time she ever put bags on her bike, and then she just went for it. And it was, she has like the skills to document it because she's coming from the background of photojournalism where you're a backpack journalist, you just have a camera with you, you carry your own equipment anyway. So she just transferred that to being on a bike and doing it. And it makes it so, you know, she can capture things in such remote places. And we can experience those together. And then that's transition from, she used to work at newspapers, and now we can do this full time, just traveling and riding and sharing that. She also does work with other bike, but it's always pretty much always in the bicycle industry, you know, capturing other racers. But instead of, you know, a desk job, this is something we can do on the road, which has been so cool. I mean, when we first got together, we did our first road trip to move out of Alaska, and then we were working at a pizza place, like the two employees. So we'd, you know, high five, switching shifts. And I mean, making zero money, we were so happy that we got free pizza. But I mean, it's like, you know, even free pizza is great. But you know, then I'm like sitting at the pizza place, looking out the window, wishing I was riding my bike. I was still racing, so I'd just be like, I just never slept. Because I'm like, well, when I'm not working, I have to be riding and trying to fit in the things that I love. And now I get to do that every day instead of working at a pizza place. I get to ride my bike or plan more trips or, you know, start girls programs, do the things that I really believe in. So it's been amazing. It's been a crazy trip that it's actually worked out. I mean, I can't believe I'm a professional bike packer. If I had like heard that 10 years ago, you know, when I'm traveling, I was like, what? Like that, how is that even possible? You know, so it's been really, really cool. It's, you know, basically my dreams coming true, but I just never knew it would develop like this. You know, year to year, you're so focused on just making it work that you never think, I never thought this would be a career.
But I guess with things like that, like a lot of things in life, is you can have the goal or the dream, and then it comes down to consistency being one of them. And if you're honest with yourself and following your gut, because like what you've done, you know, if you look at some of the places you put yourself, the start line of some races where, you know, it's scary places to be. And like, those are brave moves, but following your intuition, I suppose, and out of your comfort zone. And you do that consistently. It's amazing when you look up after a couple weeks, months, or years, how far you can go, which is, I think, one of the, for a lot of people, is very motivating and where you inspire a lot of people. And that's why you mentioned some of the events you kind of are involved with now. And I think it'd be good to talk about, I know, the Komoot rallies and things like that. Tell us more about those events and what your sort of intention with those are.
Oh, I love the Komoot Women's Rally. It's super cool. So we started this just over a year ago, and the idea is to take a beautiful, challenging route, have a group of 50 women all start together. And then there's no set plan or distance you're going per day, but basically you're riding the route with the intention of trying to finish a week later. So the first one we did was last September on the Torino-Nice Rally, a gorgeous route. I hadn't ridden it before, but I just always wanted to ride it. And I had told Gabby that works at Komoot, I was like, a month before we did the rally, maybe even less, I said, I really want to do this project, because I've hosted group starts with mixed men and women in the past. And it's so cool how these things like kind of unfold. You're not given anything except for like a start time and place and a route. And everybody has to figure out what they need along the way. But what ends up happening is like you meet new people, and throughout the days, you're like leapfrogging one another and then sharing stories, figuring things out together, solving problems, and, you know, just having this adventure for a week. And I thought, how cool would it be if we had 50 women, because nothing like that had happened before. And it changes kind of the feel of the event, because there are never 50 women. They're rarely more than 10% women. So to have women from different places in the world all come together. And then I just knew if we did that, they would start exchanging ideas, and then things would kind of grow from this. Last year, we, you know, put this together in a month. In the end, we had 50 sign up, but then we had 26 show up. And I thought, well, we got to start somewhere. And it was so much fun. The route's beautiful. It's hard. But by the end, it's like everybody was like doing their own ride. And then by the end, we were all camping together, kind of prolonging the experience. Like, we could have gotten to the finish faster, but nobody wanted to. They just wanted to still be out there. So it was so, and then even before we finished that one, we were like, we have to do it again. So we did one this end of April in Spain on the Montañas Vecinas route, which is kind of a wild route. Ernesto Pastores put this together in an area of Spain that's losing population so quickly. It's only old people. These villages are abandoned, but there's beautiful nature.
Oh, I did see that. I saw something about that. It looks like the moon out there. It's a pretty crazy part of the country.
It is. And then he thought by putting this bikepacking route into this area, it would breathe life back into these like really quiet, sleepy towns. And it's working, you know, it's like since then, like bars are reopening because cyclists come through and they need food, they need a place to stay. And so it's kind of reviving the place.
Well, the Tour Divide did that in a lot of ways, didn't it as well?
Like certain, it seems bike routes just do that. So cool place to ride, cool project. We did that in April. We scouted a new route in Slovenia in August, which will be next year, and then hosted a second Torino Nice rally this September. And I mean, it's my favorite week of the year. It's so much fun meeting 50 new women and just having this adventure together. You know, I love it, but I feel like people ask me, well, why is it only women? But there's room for more. It's like, you could have a women's rally. You could have basically take any route, set a start date and invite people to be there. And you could, there's like an endless room to have these kinds of events because people don't have to pay for it. You don't have to give them anything besides just starting together.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I think as we spoke about early on, I think also all women events also have their place in creating for women that feel a little bit insecure about that that space, that environment, to feel they can go to an event and feel they're in a safe space is equally important to empowering what we were talking about earlier about, you know, lowering the barrier to entry. So, you know, I think there's plenty of events going on.
Yeah, exactly. There's room for more.
Always, exactly. Well, I wanted to, one of the questions I needed to ask was, when you're doing these rides, okay, let's go racing. Like this is when you're in deep, dark race mode. I feel like one of your superpowers is your eternal bottomless pit of enthusiasm.
there are definitely...
Is that like a practice thing? Like, you know, just...
I feel like it's getting easier to feel that way. Like I used to have these kind of more negative thoughts and they just spiral like, oh, you're doing horribly. Like when I was early on in this sport, and then at some point I realized this is not helping. Like having this consistent negative loop, you know, and then I realized I got to a point where I was like, well, just am I doing my best? And if I am, even if I'm not riding as well as I wish I was, or even if something hurts really bad, it's like, well, this is the best I can do. Let's just enjoy it. You know, and then when because things always get better, you feel horrible. And then an hour later, you feel great. So I guess through that experience, I know it'll turn around. And then I'm just, you know, I'm almost always enjoying it. And then there are these dark moments where I'm like, oh, this is awful. And then sometimes it's so awful that it almost just becomes funny.
Yeah, you're like, what am I doing here? How did I get here?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and then something else breaks, or like, or you realize like the sandwich you bought is like moldy. And you're like, oh my God.
This is it, rock bottom.
So terrible. Yeah, and then something else always makes it worse. So I think, you know, it's like that is pretty funny. And then also it's like, I'm doing this to myself. Nobody else cares if I'm out there. This is optional. I mean, it might be super hard, but it's also a choice, you know? So I think you can't take it too seriously or get too negative on it because you chose to be there in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where I like the whole gravel cycling, gravel, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter what bike you're on, but that whole way of thinking, you know, the bike computer can be in your bag. It doesn't have to be just being out for the sake of being out and taking the benefits of it.
Yeah. And seeing what happens.
Yeah. I feel like that's a growing movement, which is important.
Yeah. And it's a very huge range of experiences, but like that probably also makes it more special because you go so deep and then you go so high. You know, and it's like, you can't really have one without the other. I don't enjoy those terrible moments, but I think I've gotten to a point where I'm like, pain, I don't really care that much. It's not that emotional for me. I'm like, it's just part of what's happening right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's part of the package that, you know, where there's a yin, there's a yang, we'll get out of this. That's cool. That's kind of, I thought what your answer might be something like that. So it's I got to practice, it's just kill it with kindness is where I'll go from there. Well, this wouldn't be a cycle podcast of some sort without one or two bicycle related questions. So, because that's something I've not really seen you talk much about is tech side. Where are you on the scale of bike nerd? Where do you fit on there?
I guess I get so excited about things that like work well for me. So then I'm like, this is the best thing ever. You know, like having electronic shifting with a drop bar and an Eagle cassette. I'm like, yeah, like this is so cool. But it's like, you know, I'm not a good bike mechanic, but then if something actually works well, I'm just so grateful that it's there. And then, you know, I have friends that can help set me up with these wonderful bikes because they just keep getting better and better, you know? So I don't know. I find what works and then I'm happy about that. And then I guess I'm always like, you know, planning for these super long rides where there's such a diversity in terrain so it's like you have to figure out what's going to be fastest overall. You have to make compromises. Mm.
Have you had to change that a bit? Like, have you had to, over the years, for example, you know, watching one of your films where you're eating your ice cream with a toothbrush as a weight saving? is that something that over the years you've become more conscious of, like, okay, being lighter to be faster, or is that kind of always been on your mind?
Well, I used to be way more extreme about it. Like, oh, I'm not bringing a sleeping bag. I'm not bringing a sleeping pad. And then I've suffered tremendously where I'm like shaking on the ground and thinking that was the worst decision ever. You know, so then I like go back to bringing more stuff. And then it's always this kind of, I love minimalism. Like if I can just get rid of something on my bike, I'm like cheering about it. I'm so happy. But then I found that sometimes I'm like too excited about not bringing something and then it's a mistake, you know? And then I'm like...
Like my friend said, comfort equals speed
A lot of the time. I mean, like you have to pick and choose, but like a lot of the time, that's more like my bike setup itself. So I get wider volume tires. I'm always riding with suspension. I try to get as many hand positions as I can because ultimately that's where I feel the most pain is in my hands by far. But then it's like unconventional things. Like I don't ride with a chamois, but I feel like for multi-day things, that's better. It's, you know, chamois would get disgusting. You can't properly wash them. They don't dry. So that's something that works for me. But then, yeah, you find these little things that are very personal. But yeah, I've definitely been too minimal. I used to be such like I was so crazy when I started this in 2015 Tour Divide. The first time I raced, I didn't shower for 17 days because I was like, that's wasting time. That is so disgusting. I mean, I was so crazy and I didn't sleep inside because I was like, if I check into a hotel, I'm wasting time checking in. I mean, I was so crazy. Now I'm like, oh, it's worth it because I sleep so much better. I can charge all my stuff. I can take a shower. Then I sleep better and feel better the next day. I think I've gotten like a little softer. I mean, I was so strict. I was like, I didn't listen to music. So I was like, I don't want to have cords around me or, you know, have any distractions. I was so insane.
Was really minimal. Yeah. Like stripped
down.
Yeah.
It was like, wow. This is the way I go, you know? So, I mean, I've gotten like, I've changed that a bit, but things that end up working, you know, it's like electronic shifting is easier on my hands. I have to charge the batteries, but it's like better overall.
Someone had taken the time, I'm not a maths guy, to work out on those races the difference between electronic and manual shifting, the energy exertion over like all those miles, it actually adds up, and it's something I never actually thought about.
I mean, I'm not worried about that, but you know, from manual shifting, my thumbnail fell off. It turned black and fell off. You know, it's like way more pain. Like these things, it's like because you do the same thing for so long, you know, it's like you end up seeing these, like your body's going to break down so much sooner than these bikes. These bikes are amazing. They'll last forever, you know, but then finding out like what's going to like save my body the most or having suspension. Yeah, it's a bit heavier, but then, you know, you think about all that jarring over that much time, you feel a lot more pain. And if you feel a lot more pain, then you ride more slowly. That's just how it works. Like, you can't push the pedals as hard. Having easier gearing, you could like move better, you'll ride faster. You know, your knees won't hurt as much.
Even from a mental point of view, to be able to spin, you know, with that Eagle 52 at the back, like, even if I'm not going fast, if I feel like my legs are moving faster, it's good for my head, you know, compared to grinding.
Yeah. Through. Yeah, exactly. So whatever works, you know, ultimately, but like, this stuff, it doesn't look faster, but then in the end it is, because of all these reasons, or having like a better sleeping bag, you know, it's like you'll recover and then you ride faster. So it's always a game, but you don't want to bring too much, you know? So that's the other part of it, is like, yeah, I don't want to bring.
Seems like
much.
You have a slightly healthier relationship with stuff now on the bike than
crazy. Or my own personal like hygiene or headspace, you know, but I was.
That's why there were never competitors anywhere near you, because it's like, this is a tactic and, you know.
My friend came out to see me, like, she lived in New Mexico, and then somebody was like, whoa, what was that like? She hasn't showered. And she was like, well, she doesn't really smell bad. She just smells like dirt. Like, I was like, part of the earth.
Part of the dirt. Well, that's all right. You know, the earth smells all right.
I guess.
Yeah, that's funny. Oh, God. That's funny. Oh, well, I've taken a bit of your time here already, Leah. I got one or two more questions for you just before we kind of wrap up here. One thing I've never actually heard you speak about, maybe you have your most challenging event to date, race event. Let's call it race. Like, what have you, is there one that sticks out?
Oh, yeah, the Arizona Trail. Oh,
oh really?
It's horrible. Yeah. Okay. Oh, God. Definitely. So that was my first video project in 2015. I had to quit because I had breathing problems. I finally came back for the full ride this spring, and it's just brutal. It's like,
Watching you hike a bike down that trail, yeah, with a bike on your back, you just look like someone gave her a hug.
I mean that, like, but it's like the amount of walking anyway, even when it's legal to ride, it's so rough. You can't ride. The trail's overgrown sometimes, so you're like bushwhacking through like prickly branches, you know, like cactus basically. And then, you know, and then it's super hot. There's no water. I'd be out of water for like 3 hours and I'd be like, I'm going to die.
Who fills up those water spots? Like
trail angels.
Like, that's proper angel stuff.
Yeah. It's like people that are supporting the trail, because I mean, people are hiking this, biking, you can cover more distance hiking. You know, there are stretches 50K with zero water. So it's like, so people do fill those with gallons, but you know, that's also not everywhere. The trail is like 1500K, 1400K. It's for hiking. And then you get to the north and there's snow. So you go from the desert to snow. And then I'm like pushing my bike over snow, and they haven't worked on the trail all year. So there are just huge trees. And I'm like lifting my bike over trees through the dark, sleep deprived. It's freezing. You know, it's like, how much stuff can you carry on a bike? I mean, I was mostly carrying electronics because I need powerful lights through the night, stuff like that. So then, I mean, it's just like endless challenges, but then also so much beauty. I mean, the cacti were all blooming like pink and red flowers, you know, it looked so beautiful and it was so remote, but it was also just so hard. It's like, this is horrible. You know, I'm just like sunburnt and like starving to death.
That image of you there eating your ice cream with your toothbrush, talking to those German ladies, was, and you just had this look on your face like, I'm done. I'm ready for this to be over.
Yeah. I mean, that was like a high point. The Grand Canyon's beautiful, but then you're carrying your bike on your back down. And I was like, that was the only time during the whole thing where I was like, this might be too hard. I felt like I was going to die. I had like the sun beating down on me. And then all these other hikers are so hilarious because, of course, everybody has some kind of commentary about what I'm doing.
I was going to say, everyone's got a comment, right? Everyone's going to chirp.
But they were actually so nice for the most part. I mean, I was like, I must look like such an idiot. And they're like, you're my hero. You know, you're amazing. And I'm like, why? And then they're like the best is when they're like, is there good riding down there? And I'm like, no.
I'm literally carrying my bike on my back. Let that be the answer.
That's the only thing I'm doing here. Yeah. And then I'm going to carry it back up. So, but it was still cool. I don't know.
So that's the trail. Yeah. As you say, right? You, even through those dark moments, you look back fondly, you might not be rushing back to challenge, take on that Arizona trail.
I know,
trail
but
anytime.
I'm doing it again next year.
Okay. You
that's
are, right.
That's the thing.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like,
again, that's
when
totally
I
your
finished,
fault.
I was like, never again. And I had like the map on my wall and I tore it down. It's like, and now I'm going to do it again because next year I'm racing the American races, Tour Divide, Arizona Trail, Colorado Trail. And that's my focus. Yeah. At the group start. So no more records, just racing people.
Okay. So just races. Okay. That's, well, that's going to be cool to
I'm excited.
Follow along. Well, then the last kind of event I want to chat about is one that is quite close home to me, is the Rhino Run, which you recently signed up for, which I've just seen the start list. My friend Kevin Bankenstein just put it up like this. So many people now, you know, big players in the ultra distance field that are, I think, quite last minute have decided, oh, let me go and ride a 2,500-kilometer ride through South Africa and Namibia.
Yeah, it's going to be hard.
You're looking forward to that one?
Yeah, I think it'll be cool. You know, the organizer, Ryan, kept asking, can you come? Can you come? And I was like, I don't think so because I'm super tired. And we've been traveling since April. And I'm like, Rue is going to kill me if I add another event at this point. But then I talked it over with Rue and she's like, well, if you don't go, you're just going to wish that you were there. Because it's the first year of the event. It has so many people coming. I've ridden in South Africa, never Namibia. I've never raced there. And the roads, I mean, it's actually beautiful riding and I don't feel super intimidated by it. I think it'll be nice, but it'll be hard because it's long. But they have like beautiful dirt roads and there's like so much quiet. It's so peaceful out there, you know? So I think it'll actually be really nice and it has tons of climbing, which I love. So I just hope my body kind of holds together because I've really pushed it this year with events and rides. So,
But like you said, like you can go and have a look and there's nothing, you know, you got to listen to your body and see how it goes, but just going down there and seeing some of the route, I suppose will be worth it in itself. So it'd be great to have you down there.
Yeah. And it'll be a great race, great competition. You know, I haven't gotten to race against Sarah Hammond since 2016. I'm super excited that she's coming back. You know, she's so fierce. So I just want to be there. Like, I want to support the event. I want to race to my best. And then I'm like, I already have this, you know, plan for the US next year. So I won't have the flexibility to add in events next year like that. So I'm kind of like going for bust this year. I have Rhino Run and then across Andes in Chile in November. And then hopefully I'm done for the year.
Okay. Right. Well, as I say, it's been so awesome catching up here and hearing some of those stories and so looking forward to sort of seeing what's coming up over the next few years. And I'm kind of excited for you for next year, as you say, that you're kind of doing it more for yourself in inverted commas, like less media stuff and just going out there to ride and race, which is going to be awesome to follow along, I think.
Yeah. And compete, you know, I've done so many of these solo events and then it's like, this will be great because there are like actual people out there to race against. So
yeah,
it seems which simple. Makes a difference. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, I thank you so much for the time.
Cool. Great talking with you.
Ciao.
Thanks so much. Bye.
And there we go. That's a wrap on another show. Thank you for joining us, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. It's always a pleasure when we sit down with such amazing and talented individuals with a wonderful story to tell. Because as you know, on Gravel Junction, we love a good story. Okay, before we go on, this is not an ad. Please don't hang up. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Please don't go. Just a quick community request. I know every podcast goes on about, oh, leave me a review, 5 stars. Yeah, let's get noticed. Woohoo! Look, don't get me wrong. I will happily take that. And that was a high five. I'll take it. Cool. If you like the show and you would like to leave me a review, yes. But more importantly, I've kind of realized what I would like even more is to actually hear from the community. Is anyone out there any one of my four listeners enjoying the show, the format, the style? Would they like to see something different? I feel I gain a lot from creating this show, and that's the reason I do this. You know, I'm certainly not getting paid. I just love the platform that it has created and allows me to talk to some really amazing and interesting people. And hopefully that comes across in the show and you, the listener, are gaining from that as well. But yes, maybe via Instagram at The Gravel Junction. Drop me a message, a comment, a post, something positive, negative, constructive, preferably not deconstructive. But whatever, I would love to hear from people that are listening to the show and how they view it. That's kind of all I had to say. Thank you for bearing with me. I also wanted to take the time to again remind everybody about the Sule Kangangi GoFundMe page. Raising money for Sule's family after he tragically lost his life recently in a bike race event. He leaves a massive hole, and it's something I've mentioned a few times now on my Instagram on previous episodes, because although I only met him briefly and was very fortunate to have sat down and recorded an episode with him, his loss has shaken me, and I know it's shaken a lot of people in the bicycle family, in the cycling family, should I say. So let's do what we can to help Sule's family and to continue his legacy and to continue the hard work he was doing, because I think he was doing such a phenomenal job, and it's important for us to kind of keep that going. Anyway, guys, go check that out. I'll put the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for your time. Until next time, you keep riding. Bye for now.